tonight, as promised, I'm going to stray from the syllabi, and I'm going to go to the July 1st or something lesson on complaining, right? So, in particular, this lesson, there were, three different books, outlines, etc., that we're kind of looking at this quarter. And in this particular topic, I'm kind of pulling from all three of them. So, one of them talks about us speaking against each other. One of them, is murmuring, and the other one is complaining. And so I thought that those had definitely enough overlap that we can certainly draw from those areas. So, this one's a negative attitude. I didn't want to spend the entire quarter looking at all the things that are negative and telling us how we needed to fix stuff because it was bad. So we've done some positive things and how we can get better at them. But tonight, as we look at complaining, I'm going to take a slightly different approach because I want to think about two main things really. So one of them is, why do I complain, right? So what is it that causes me to complain? So, some say that having a poor self-image leads to complaining. I looked on the internet real quick, and I saw a study that was referenced in a Psychology Today article in 2017, and it stated, I know this may be surprising to many of you, but happy people complain less. Does that surprise anybody here? That happy people complain less. So I guess that's it. We're done. We're just all going to be happy, right? Why are you smirking at me? Yeah, okay. You're good. You're on board. All right. So so as I thought about what some of the reasons are of how we complain, why I may complain, right? One of them is, I think that we have a tendency to see the world through the eyes of someone else, right? And that causes us, or that gives us the ability or the desire, I guess, to complain. And so does anybody know what I mean when I say that statement? I see the world through somebody else's eyes. Yeah. Freddie's smart, right? He sees Exodus 15 through 17 as the chapters, and he realizes I'm actually talking about the children of Israel, right? And so I think that's an example for us, and I want to read a few verses from Exodus. I want to start in Exodus 17. Then all the congregation of the children of Israel set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sin, according to the commandment of the Lord, and camped in Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Do we remember this story? Right? What happens? They were all happy and enjoyed each other's company? No. I think this one goes back to the title here, right? They started to complain. Right, verse 2, therefore the people contended with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said to them, why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord? And the people thirsted there for water. And the people complained against Moses and said, why is it that you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, what shall I do with this people? They are almost ready to stone me. So in this case, I kind of think of it as, what were the Israelites doing here? When they started to complain about going out here and dying of thirst? Because they reference, well, it would have been better if we'd stayed in Egypt, right? So whose eyes were they looking through at that point whenever they were thinking back, right? Well, we were much better off when we had water. Right. What does Exodus the third chapter and verse 7 say? The burning bush, right? Moses on the mountain, the Lord talking to Moses, and he says, go ahead. He knows their sorrows, that's right. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So it was so good for them back in Egypt that they cried to God because they were in such misery, but here they come up against an issue, right? They don't have water, and they fall right back into complaining. Right? They want to complain about that. And so sometimes, you know, we call it 20/20 vision, right? When we look back, we think we see more and understand more about what has happened, right? So I think my point here is that when I complain, I often forget about all the other facts, right? Don't like that to cloud the issue. And then in some cases, I wanted other people to know that I've been treated poorly, right? Because if I complain, that's really, talking about somebody else has done this horrible thing to me, right? And so those two things can sometimes be our motivation, right? And we see what the Israelites did in the wilderness. And so this is where, you know, we're kind of going to jump around through 15, 16, and 17 in Exodus, right? So Exodus 15, verse 24, it says, now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? Right? And he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, and when he cast in the waters were made sweet. There he made a statue and an ordinance from them, and there he tested them. So they show up in Marah as they've crossed the Red Sea. First obstacle. God solves that problem for them, but we see that they complain, right? Exodus 16, 2 and 3. Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill the whole assembly with hunger, right? So what happens later in 16? What's given to them? Manna, all right, the manna's given to them. So, but here they start to get hungry, their supplies are running out, and they immediately turn to complaining against Moses and Aaron and you know, really kind of somewhat thinking, you know, back to Egypt and, you know, at least they knew what they had there, right? Exodus 17, verse 3, right? Which is just, you know, what I just read, right? And the people thirsted there for water, and the people complained against Moses and said, why have you brought us out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? So sometimes, you know, I think when I complain, I'm looking at the world through another angle, right? Somebody else's eyes, somebody else's thought process, or remembering back and thinking about how good it was when I wasn't in this struggle, right? Yeah, so the question is, did they ever thank God for what he did? And I think that it's not, I don't know of a specific verse where it's recorded that says that. I believe that when they, you know, set up the tabernacle and, you know, built that and offered the sacrifices, that was a way of following his instruction. But yeah, there's not a verse that then said, you know what, and, you know, after all that was done, they really thanked God and said, you know, we really appreciate that. We're sorry we complained against you. Right?
Did they ever pray to God for those things?
And the question is, did they ever pray to God for those things? We don't see, and that's a point I'm going to make here in a minute, we don't see that they're, no, it's no, perfectly fine, good question, right? We don't see when we see it stated that they are complaining, that they first inquired of God and asked him what they needed to do, right? So one of the things that we should probably do before we jump right into the complaining bucket, right, is actually, you know, try to figure out what the situation is and go to God in prayer.
Even at this point, he had already done so much for them.
Right. And that's, I think, the point with it being so soon here in Exodus. You know, they were in a dire situation in Egypt, right, under horrible taskmasters, right? You know, and they kept getting things taken away from them and asking them to continue to build just as fast, right, especially during the plagues time. And yet they walked out having looted the Egyptians, and the first thing that happens before they even cross the Red Sea, right, they turn around like, oh no, you sent us out here to die, right? I mean, just days after all that has happened, right? And so, yeah, this is something that I, you know, in the end, I'll talk about, you know, the examples that we have, right? This is an example that we have of complaining and what we can learn from that, right?
So.
Right, where they felt trapped, right? So Freddie makes a point that, you know, here's a people that had been whipped and beaten and, you know, really suppressed, you know, this whole time, and yet, you know, here they just got released, and then they turn around and they see Egypt coming to them, and their natural reaction, right, is to sit there and go, oh no, right, we have nowhere to go, right? And you know, the whole point of the crossing of the Red Sea, right, is to show the people the power of God, right? And you know, I often wonder, would I be in the exact same complaining boat all along the way here, right? Because the seas parted, I cross on dry land, I get to the other side, we start marching along, and all of a sudden we finally get to water and it's bitter, right? It's like, well, how are we going to live with that, right? And, you know, forgetting the fact that, you know, they were just miraculously saved by God and an entire army was, you know, wiped out by the Red Sea. But
we've seen that pattern behavior all the way through the Old Testament. And even to today, Christians, we have a pattern of not having enough faith in God.
Right.
9/11, I mean, everybody started coming back to church, not even within 2 months. We had baptisms and everything, 2 months, and they went back to their old
ways. Right. She's saying that we've had a pattern in the, you know, among Christians about not having the faith that we need to in God, and then, you know, reference the, you know, like what happened back in, you know, September 11th of 2001, and how everybody all of a sudden, you know, and I don't like to, well, I won't use that word then because I don't like to use it. But everyone, you know, became much more thoughtful about God and this, you know, this nation under God. And they all, you know, I say they all, here I go, right? But a lot of people all of a sudden started coming back, right, to churches all over the land because they were going to change. And then, you know, she referenced, you know, what happened a couple of months later, right? Right back to the same old, same old. How soon we forget. That's right. So, okay. And then, you know, I forgot to hit the clicker, but these are additional points that I wanted to make, right? So, you know, do we ever say, boy, it would be a lot easier if I had what, you know, so-and-so had, right? Because then that justifies our stance and our complaint, right? I always look at what somebody else had, and if I had that, then I wouldn't be frustrated, and I wouldn't be angry, I wouldn't be mad, right? if I just had that, right? Or I've been treated so badly, right? And so because of that, it's okay for me to do what I'm gonna, you know, what I'm gonna do here and complaining, right? How about I complain because I think I can do it better, right? If I were just in charge, right? Anybody had those thoughts? I would be so much better if it were just, you know, me being in charge and I can make all these decisions, right? So what happens in number 16? Still the Israelites, by the way. So I'm not going to make it that easy. Number 16, the rebellion of Korah. Okay. Sorry, I'll eventually get there. Number 16, verse 3. Right, and they gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, "You take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" All right. Wow. Sounds like a pretty strong argument, right? You know, here we're all part of the family here, and you know, why is it you guys that are the ones that are in charge, right? So as we read on down, I want to start in verse 28 and go to 33, right? And this is you know, the Lord's reaction to their disapproval of the way that the Lord set things up, right? They go through a situation where this is take censers, Korah and all your company, put fire in them, incense in them, and burn them before the Lord. And the man whom the Lord chooses is the Holy One. You know, you take too much upon yourselves, you sons of Levi. Right. So they go through this process, and they're going to ask the Lord to actually make the choice. Right. The Lord makes a choice. And in verse 28, Moses is talking to the Lord and says, Moses is speaking to the people. He says, "By this you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of my own will. If these men die naturally like all men, or if they are visited by a common fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me." Right? But if the Lord creates a new thing and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them and they go down alive into the pit, then you will understand that these men have rejected the Lord. Now it came to pass as he finished speaking all these words that, what happened? The ground opened up, split apart underneath them, and it swallowed them up with them and their households, all the men of Korah with all their goods. And all those with them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed over them, and they perished from among the assembly. Right? I don't think that there was much doubt left there as to why Moses and Aaron were doing what they were doing. Right? And the approach taken by Korah there was not the right one. Right? He didn't ask why. He didn't nicely or politely inquire, right? He didn't, you know, respectfully inquire. He didn't do any of that. He just said, "Hey, wait a minute, right? I should be in charge here," right? So, number 16, verse 35, a little further down. "Then all Israel who were around them fled at their cry, for they said, 'Lest the earth swallow us up also.' And a fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering incense." So all the others that thought that they could throw their hat in the ring, that was not a good idea, right? Number 16, verse 41, it says, "On the next day, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron, saying, 'You have killed the people of the Lord.'" They're not quite getting this whole complaining thing down, right? In Numbers 16, verse 49, it says, "Now all those who died in the plague were 14,700, besides those who died in the Korah incident." Right? So the Lord keeps punishing those who think that they can set themselves up and be in charge when it's not their duty, right? So, you know, what Korah did wasn't acceptable to God, right? And if I, well, I'll try to remember to make the point later about something that kind of ties into this. But Freddie's statement is one that was, instead of approaching it with what can I do to help, right? How can I assist here? You know, that is not what Korah did. He turned around and said, "You guys don't need to be in charge. You know, we need to be in charge, or I need to be in charge, really." And he went from there. Okay. So what if I have an agenda? Right? Do I complain because I have an agenda? I'm gonna plant all these little seeds in other people's minds by the way that I'm complaining, right? It's because I want to get to a certain end goal. Right? And so, you know, this one I pull the New Testament references from, right?
It might be that agenda that you had was so hard you couldn't reach that point.
Right. It may be that the agenda was so difficult that you couldn't actually get to the end point without doing this.
Still, you were expecting your results out of it.
Right. That you still expected results from it, but it was going to take more than what you could accomplish yourself. So, you know, during Jesus' time on this earth, you know, he met with many of the, you know, leaders of Israel, scribes, priests, right, rabbis, and you know, they all had power, you know, granted upon themselves to give instruction on how God's law was to be followed, right? But now here's Jesus that's come in, and he begins to tell them what those scriptures mean and what happened when his explanation of what the scripture was and their interpretation of what the scripture was were not in sync. What happened? How do we like criticism? Right? And so that didn't go very well, and they began to have issues, right? I have here, before we get to Matthew 9, right, Proverbs 6, 16 through 19, you know, "These six things the Lord hates, yes, seven are an abomination to him: a proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren," right? And so in that, in the complaining, murmuring piece, right, devising wicked plans, speaking lies, right? There's several things that are in that list. But we see those coming to fruition when we see some of the examples of the scribes and the Pharisees as they complain. In Matthew chapter 9, verse 3, Matthew chapter 9, we'll start in verse 1, it says, "So he got into a boat, crossed over, and came to his own city. Then behold, they brought to him a paralytic lying on a bed. When Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralytic, 'Son, be of good cheer, your sins are forgiven you.' And at once some of the scribes said within themselves, 'This man blasphemes,'" right? So they start to look and determine immediately things that he says and begin to twist it, right? Matthew 12, verse 10 says, "And behold, there was a man who had a withered hand, and they asked him, saying, 'Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?' And then what's the end of that verse say? Matthew 12, verse 10. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath that they may accuse him? Right? So their questions, their whole thought process is to drive to something that they can accuse him of, that they can plot against, right? On Sunday, we talked about, you know, the paying taxes piece, right? In Matthew 22:15, and it says, "Then the Pharisees went and plotted how they might entangle him in his talk," right? And then they ask him the question about taxes and whether they should pay taxes, and he says, you know, "Give me a coin, whose image is this," right? But their desire is they had an agenda, right? And so they looked at all the different things that were being said, and instead of trying to come to an understanding of why he was doing it, right, they were like, "Hey, that's different than what I've been talking about, right? That's not what I expected from the Son of God to come on this earth, right? And so, therefore, it must be wrong, and therefore, we got to figure out what to do with this, right? And so then, the fourth point here is, do I complain because I'm not putting my trust in God, right? If I see things that are happening that I don't like, or I think I can change, do I look at the situation and see only a small part of the whole picture, but then determine the correct path, right? In Luke 15, verse 1 and 2, you know, it says, "All the tax collectors and sinners drew near to him to hear him, and the Pharisees and scribes complained, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them,'" right? So as was stated earlier, right, there wasn't a question as to why he was doing what he was doing. They just immediately, you know, he's doing something wrong, right? I'm going to complain about this, and you know, here we are the good people. People are following his will, and he's going off and he's eating with sinners and receives them. Luke 19, verse 7, Zacchaeus, right? "But when they saw it, they all complained, saying, 'He has gone to be a guest with a man who is a sinner,'" right? John 6, verse 60 through 62, Jesus is speaking about, this is right before, this is Jesus talking about what would happen later, right? John 6, verse 60, starting in verse 60, "Therefore many of his disciples, when they heard this, said, 'This is a hard saying, who can understand it?' When Jesus knew in himself that the disciples complained about this, he said to them, 'Does this offend you? What then if you should see the Son of Man ascend where he was before?'" He'd just been talking about eating his body and drinking his blood, right? And they didn't understand what he was talking about. But what did they not do because of that? They didn't ask a question, right? They just thought, "Oh no, this is really, really difficult," and then they're trying to figure out what happened. So I say, instead of listening and discerning the teachings of Christ, we see them putting their trust in their own understanding and then convincing themselves that this isn't the way that God would have it, right? They didn't open up, they didn't ask questions, and because of that, they wind up in a situation which separates them from God. So am I putting my trust in God? Am I asking? Am I praying? Am I doing those kinds of things so that I can have a better understanding, right? So then, more practically, how do I stop complaining, right? How can I not complain, right? And, you know, one obvious point, right, is to think about what James says, right? Yeah, that one has to bridle their tongue. In James chapter 1, verse 26, "If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless," right? James 3, you know, a very difficult passage for me. But James 3, chapter 3, verse 2, "For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships, although they are so large, are driven by fierce winds. They are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire can kindle." And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no one man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord, our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not be so." Tongue's a mighty, mighty thing, right? Chapter 4, verse 11, James says, "Do not speak evil of one another. He who speaks evil of a brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge," right? Which kind of moves me into my second point here of how can I not complain, and that is I have to be careful of my judgments, right? In Mark 14, we see Jesus at Bethany shortly before the crucifixion. And in Mark 14, verse 3 through 5, it says, "And being in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at the table, a woman having an alabaster flask of very costly oil of spikenard, then she broke the flask and poured it on his head. But there were some who were indignant among themselves and said, 'Why is this fragrant oil wasted? For it might have been sold for more than 300 denarii and given to the poor.' And they criticized her sharply." Right? So those around, you know, wanted to sit and talk about the waste and how it could be used to help others. But, you know, what we don't see here is anybody asking Jesus why she may have done that. Right? Because he has to rebuke them. Right? In that same passage, just a little further down, and he says some things that help explain that. But he doesn't do that in response to them saying, "Hey, what happened here?" Right? They just jumped right in. They began to judge immediately, and they complained, right? So, you know, the second thing is, you know, what about Matthew 7, right? Because Matthew 7, verse 1 says, "Judge not, that you be not judged," right? I know a lot of people know that verse. Right. Is that where it stops? Is that all we need to have right now? You can just wrap it up right there. Just tear the rest of it off, because 2 through 6 has a lot of information, right? "For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me remove the speck from your eye,' and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite. First, remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you in pieces." Right? So you think snap judgments without any facts that obviously places the blame solely on somebody else, you know, supporting the murmuring and complaining of you or some other people, right? Is that the way that you want to be judged? Because, you know, I got to think about this and say that's probably not the way I want to be judged, right? So, when we have some of these situations, right, we need to listen to the facts and we need to pay attention, and then we need to offer some assistance, right? And not hear just enough to draw a conclusion, right? So how do we get better about our own judgments, right? Yeah.
A lot of people go into situations already with their minds made up.
That's right. Yeah, Freddie says, you know, there's a lot of people that walk into a situation, they have already determined what the outcome is in their mind, right? There is no openness to it. Their mind is made up, and that's that, right? You know, can I pause before I actually talk? Right?
When your tongue is in motion before your mind is.
Yeah, right? Can I listen and not feel like I must have the answer to all the questions immediately? Right? What is it in us that at times we think we have to immediately answer that question, even though it may be very difficult and we should probably think a little bit more about it? Right? Should we learn to be patient? Right? And should we have love here, right? Because that's ultimately, and I think we'll get to that in this class, right? But at the foundation of all of this, if we have love, how does that really change our attitude? True love for each other, right? So the question is, you know, how can I not complain? How about I learn from the examples, right, that we have been given, right? 1 Corinthians 10, 1 through 11. Talks about the Old Testament examples that we've read, you know, here tonight, right? You know, verse 3, I ate all the same spiritual foods, I drank all the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock which followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. Right? So I have several highlighted parts here, right? Verse 6. You know, now that these things became our examples, verse 7, and do not become idolaters as were some of them, right? We have that example, right? Verse 8, do not let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, right? When one day when 23,000 fell. Verse 9, nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. 10, nor complain as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Right. Verse 11, now we have all these things happen. Now all of these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition upon who the ends of the ages have come. Right. So, you know, one of the things I was going to say earlier, and I have a few more thoughts here, but I'm running out of time. But, you know, I think there's a lot that can be said about, you know, different situations and us having all of the answers, because I think there's certainly times where we may question those in authority. And so within the church here, do we ever question the elders and say, well, they should be doing this and they should be doing that, right? Yet, do we have all of the information, right? So I think that's certainly something that we should look at and consider as we think about how we should follow what God says to us about complaining. All right, so on Sunday, hopefully Rob will be back. It'll be on capital punishment. And then we'll continue on there. Any other questions? Sorry, I didn't give much time. Thanks for the comments this evening.